I am now taping this conversation, and I do have PowerPoint slides, but you're not going to be able to see them. If any of you would like a copy of this and the MP3 of this conversation, plus the PowerPoint slides, just give me your business cards and, you know, just make a note, and I'll be glad to send it to you. My objective today is to talk about three kinds of work groups, teams, and ficas, and how you as an HR person can manage each of them and understand the difference between them. You know, I don't have to tell you, most of our professional lives are going to be spent in collectives with other people as opposed to just working by yourself. But there's a Confucius once said, the beginning of wisdom is to call things by the right names. And so I find the word team is often used to describe things that are not teams. So let me give you an example. Stiebel Peabody is the company that I've got. We're 38 years old. What we do is we work with companies, we do a lot of work with family businesses around putting together boards of directors, boards of advisors, succession planning. We do searches for CEOs, CFOs, chief operating officers. It's all very high end. We do leadership development, and then when it's time to part company, we do very senior level outplacement work. Great. But let's say you're Schneider Electric and you're going to be getting rid of 1,000 mid-level employees. We don't do that. You wouldn't think about us for that. That's not what we do. So a company, and again, I'm going to, for purposes of this discussion, I'm going to call it Merrimack Group. Merrimack Group comes to us and says, look, we have a technology. It's all web-based. It's you know, where we're using out-of-work HR people to man the phones, and it's really inexpensive, and it offers you an ability to provide a product to sort of lower-level people while you keep your focus on the higher end of higher end of the company. I said, that's really cool. You know, the Marriott Corporation has got the Ritz-Carlton up here. They got the Marriott for business travelers. Then they got the Marriott. They have a low-end Marriott, I think. Guest quarter. Yeah, Fairfield. I said, why can't we do that? That sounds like. So I said, why can't we do that? So we'll have Stiebel Peabody for the high end. We'll have Merrimack for the low end, and that's great. Now, Merrimack says the way we compensate is you eat what you kill. You sell something, you're going to get 15% of whatever you sell. Perfect. Got it. So I go down to New York to meet the people at Merrimack, and they say, okay, you are now part of Team Merrimack. I go, okay. First thing you have to do is get rid of your Stiebel Peabody business card, and we're giving you these new cards that says Larry Stiebel, Merrimack Group. I'm going, what? What's this about? And also, you know, now we're giving you these scripts. It's very important as we leverage, everybody says the same thing in the same way when they talk about Merrimack, and this is the script I want you to give. But it doesn't say anything about Stiebel Peabody. And I'm getting increasingly angry, and sorry to say, I had a temper tantrum, and I just said, "To hell with you guys! I don't want to be part of this team." And then reflecting on it, I realized, one, I shouldn't have had the temper tantrum. Bad move on my part. Number two, the reason I was getting so agitated was because the person who was doing the training kept referring to us as a team. This was not a team. I had this gut instinct that it was not a team, but I couldn't articulate it, and so I was getting angry. So that got me interested in what is a team? What really is a team? And we've written an article in Psychology Today, and again, part of this talk is based on that article, and if you want a copy of the article, I'll be glad to send you the article. So let's talk about three groups. Teams, work groups, and ficas. First, let's deal with work groups. the vast, vast, vast majority of the work that you're involved in is going to be work groups, not teams. So, for example, you may have once a week you bring in all of your trainers and your coaches into a room, and you're going to be talking about what's going on, and people are going to share stories. But everybody's wearing their own hat. Everybody's got their own function. You may have a senior management team, and you're wearing your HR hat, or you're wearing your general counsel hat, and you're thinking about, how does this affect me? You're not in a team. You're in a work group. In organizing a work group, one of the ideas is to be as comprehensive as possible, because usually you don't want to leave anybody slighted. You want to say everybody's opinion was solicited. So politically, it's expedient. The more inclusive we are in a work group, the better it is. That's the basic idea of running a work group. But you know you're in a work group and you're not a team when you're wearing your functional hat and you're thinking primarily from an HR point of view or a legal point of view. That's a work group. Now let's move to teams. Teams are a different situation.
Speaking of teams, a quick question for you. We have two more attendees. I wonder if we could all maybe tighten up a little.
Sure.
Bit.
Sure. Welcome. So, a team is... It's usually a smaller group of people. There are clear objectives. That's number one. And number two is the compensation is going to be based on the team results, not your individual results. So, you know, again, a good example, we saw the football game last week. It's the Patriots won. Tom Brady was great, but he didn't win. And Tom Brady will tell you he didn't win. The Patriots won. And all the Patriot players are going to share in the glory and the compensation. So it's really about that. So the difference between a team and a work group becomes very important for me in my work. So I work with a number of family businesses that are putting together boards of directors. And you put together a board of directors, you bring in some outside directors, and what you do is you pay them on the basis of a meeting fee or an annual retainer. Are they a team or are they a work group? And the answer is, they're a work group. They're all coming in with what's in it for me. Take the same board of directors, board of advisors, and you don't pay them any fee at all, but you're going to give them phantom shares, and at the end of 3 years, they're going to get some cash equal to the increased value of the company over the last 3 years. Everybody's going to get the same amount of money, and it's based on the team, it's based on the group performance. Is that a team or is it a work group? I would submit that's a team. So one way to differentiate a team from a work group is how they're paid. A second important issue about a team is the team members have the right to expel team members. That is not the case in a work group, right? And the boss comes in and says, I'm bringing in my senior management group and we're going to have... You don't have the right to get rid of somebody on the team other than... But if it's a real team, you cannot allow hangers-on. Or the other word is called free riders. How many of you have been in groups with free riders? You know, those people that they didn't come to play. They're warming a seat and they're expecting you to do the work, right? You can't allow that in a team, and so you have to give the team. You want to sit down?
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
You sure?
I'm good.
Okay. You want to give the team permission to expel someone who is not a member of a team. Why are teams and team structures and creation of teams so critical for your organizations? You look at the life cycle of a company, And a company is usually started by some entrepreneur who sees himself or herself as somewhat of an outsider and is kind of a renegade and saying, you know, there's something wrong with the way the industry is working. There's something wrong with the way the business is being doing. I'm going to do something different. Again, the classic is Steve Jobs, right? He's saying, you know, there's just something wrong with the way computers are designed. I'm going to make mine really elegant and easy to use. So he comes in with this kind of, I won't say anger, but it's kind of, you know, this, he's an outsider. And that's the first stage, the entrepreneurial stage. Then what happens, you get to the next stage, and now you're trying to scale. Now you're trying to grow. And you get, quote-unquote, professional managers coming in. And professional managers are looking for sort of index that they're going to be measured on. KPIs. They want to know what are the KPIs. And they start managing the KPIs. And that's great for scaling up the company. But as you hire professionals and as you manage to some sort of index called a KPI, you start losing that drive, that energy, that creativity that started the business. I have a slogan with my clients, is how do you grow without destruction of greatness? And that's a dilemma that I see with many of my companies, that as you grow and scale, you start losing something. Let me give you, can any of you relate to this?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, any examples in your?
We started a solar company in July.
Yeah. Was that the one being taxed by the?
One of many being taxed. But we started it because he's worked for some of the largest solar companies in the country, as well as our third partner. We all think that they do their customers a disservice by being too large and not being able to manage them in the correct way. And now we're so small, and we have one trusted installer who does great work. And we're looking at how many jobs we can do this year. And if we do over like 120, we kind of have no idea what it looks like after 120 jobs in a year as far as growth and how we could actually manage our customers, because they wouldn't be able to talk to us. Right now, they have the pleasure of talking to us.
Right.
And we kind of have this vested interest in our business to do right by them. But like, how do you give that to people who are talking to customers that don't own the company? So that's something we face.
Something that I see in my work with law firms is the KPI becomes profitability per partner. And so everything is managed according to profitability per partner. And you're trying to grow according to raise the profitability per partner at the end of the year. The problem is that when, you know, lawyers are smart people and they know how to game the system. And one of the ways you can game the system is don't make many partners. Keep the partner group small. But the problem is, the downside is, if the associates don't see any track to partnership, why are they going to stay? And so you're going to start losing your best people. The most dramatic example in my experience was, I was hired by the board of directors of a well-known international resort company to work with a founder who was, like a lot of founders, very irascible and didn't like to report to anybody, including the board of directors. And I'm supposed to turn him into Mr. Nice Guy. And he had that founder instinct. He had an anger. He had a drive. And the things weren't, there was a lot of garbage in this industry. I'm gonna make something different. And he would come in to a hotel, and I'd just watch him. And he was brilliant. He would go, and he would immediately go to the floor, and he would find somebody who was cleaning rooms, and he would say, "What's your name?" "Zoe." "So, I'm so glad you're here. You know, you're the one that keeps this company going. You know, it's the work you're doing." And so Zoe is smiling. She's feeling great. he would go around and he would say, why is that potted plant there? You know, why? It should be over here. I mean, he would get into such minute details. But you know he was obsessed with the customer experience. He was obsessed with it. Well, the board eventually got sick of his shenanigans and they fired him and brought in somebody from Harvard Business School with an MBA. This guy had been, he's a real consumer products marketing guy, and he manages two KPIs. And the KPI that he was given was room occupancy. So I started following him. He would go into the same hotel. He would never talk with the room person. He would never comment on the flowers. He would just go to the manager and say, what's the room occupancy? It's that number. Can't you increase it? And then he'd go on to the next hotel. Well, the problem is, if you run a hotel and your KPI is room occupancy, there are ways you can increase room occupancy. You go to hotels.com, instead of $150 a night, $30 a night, your room occupancy rate's going to go like this. Your profitability will be shot to hell, but your occupancy, the KPI, will be looking really good. And that's what happened with this hotel. So what happens is, as companies scale, they start going to KPIs. And as they go to KPIs, they lose the insurgency, the drive that originally created the company. Teams, if they're managed well, create that insurgency, particularly if the team is given a name and separated from the rest of the group. So for example, there are some slides here from a large defense company, and they have their own team name, and they are physically separated from the rest of the organization, which is really focusing on consistency, reliability, and growth. They're focusing on the next generation product that's going to serve our, but they have to be separated. It's usually called skunkworks, and that's because you want to keep them separate from the rest of the group. I remember when I was in the military, I was a regular infantry guy, and there were the guys who were the Green Berets, and they were the Green Berets. They were the only ones allowed to wear a Green Beret, so they were different. They were special. If you were a Ranger, you wore a certain insignia. Everybody knew you were a Ranger. That creates this team feeling. So teams are compensated differently, but the key compensation is we rise or fall together. And if you're not pulling your weight, I'm going to get you out of my team. You also limit the number. A real good rule of thumb: how many people does it take to eat two large pizza pies? Because if you had me in your team, the answer is one. But how many normal people in that, usually around seven? Don't go more than seven in a team. If you start getting 12, 15. You're gonna lose some of that team. So you may have micro teams, because a lot of complex projects in life sciences may require 50 people to get it done. So you create little subgroups that work together. Any questions about teams? And how about your experiences in teams versus work groups? Anybody? Okay. Well, there's a very good Harvard Business Review article about how do you define teams. And if you want it, just write Harvard Business Review and I'll send you that article. Now let's talk about fikas. Does anybody know what a fika is? Okay. It's a Swedish term. And it means coffee and cake. And it could easily be confused with a coffee break, but it's not. A coffee break in America is an individual employee gets up from their individual office or cubicle, goes to some room where there's an individual self-serving cup, puts their cup in, gets the coffee, goes back to their cubicle, and goes back to their office. That's an American coffee break. A fika is communal. You're going to go sit together with other people. The only requirement is coffee. That's it. No agenda, just coffee and talk. Now, I've got a client in Boston. It's a hedge fund, and the owner of the hedge fund has brilliantly designed a FICA. He doesn't know that he's created a FICA, but he has. He buys lunch for the employees, and they have different catering services every day to set up these lovely luncheons, so everybody wants to be part of it. And you have to get online, just like a cafeteria, and the dining room only has one table, but it's a very long table. And so, because everybody's getting online and then going to the long table, you never know who you're sitting next to. And so what happens is, over the course of years, let's say I'm an investment. In the course of my business every day, I just deal with investment people. I may not deal with the legal people. I may not deal with the HR people. I may not deal with compliance people. But over lunch, we're going to talk over lunch. And so I get to know you. Let me give you another example of a FICA that I created. Again, I didn't know I was doing this, but I did. I was a psychologist in a poor community in Dallas, Texas, and I came up with this idea of a lunch group only for those who are hands-on with clients. No management allowed. We specifically said the agenda is zero. There was no agenda, just we're going to have lunch together and bring an interesting dessert because we're going to share desserts. That's all we did. And we did that just for a year, and we kept managers out of it deliberately. So what happened is, we had two politically hot issues going on in this community. Anybody in the healthcare field around here? Okay, what do you do?
And where? Well, I'm on the supply side in terms of medical devices and pharmaceuticals.
Okay. How about you?
Oh, I raised my hand. Insurance broker.
Okay. So this is in my group, we would have people who would come to my mental health center and say, "Oh, I'm depressed. I'm suicidal. I think I'm going to kill myself." Oh, let's go to the doctor, and the doctor gives you certain sedatives. Then the same person then goes to the hospital and gives the same complaint and gets the same medication. Then the person goes to maybe a student at a local community college, goes to the physician, goes the same complaint, gets the same medication. Now he's got a whole bag of this meds that was paid for by the federal government. And he goes to the schoolyard and starts selling the meds to the kids. This is a problem. The federal government is supplying this guy so that he can create druggies in our community. The problem is, there are HIPAA laws that I can't tell you who my patients are, because then I'm violating the law. You can't tell me who your patients are. What are we going to do? So it was a real problem. So we just kept talking about it in the FICA, and soon enough we started divulging names, and we got these two people that kept coming up in different agencies. And I knew somebody in the Dallas Police Department. Dallas Police Department then set up a sting operation where somebody was hired to portray a student going to one of these characters and buying drugs. And so Dallas Police Department got the public accolade for making the arrest. And it was never known how that name came from. So that's an example of a FICA. Why did the FICA work? The FICA works because over time, when you start meeting people in an informal setting and you talk about anything, could be business, could be personal, could be anything, you begin to have a positive emotion about somebody. They may not be your friend, but I call them moving a work colleague into a chum. And once they become chums, you trust them more. They're not friends, they're chums. And that can change the dynamics. Let me give you another example of FICA management. Again, this is in my area. You have someone, a mother. She has a child who has an organic brain damage, is mentally retarded, is acting out and failing in school. Who's got primary accountability for that case? The problem in then and the problem now is because of the way in which things are structured from a compensation point of view, there's lots of incentives for saying, this is not my problem, why don't you go over here? Mother goes to the mental health center, and I'll say, well, you know, your kid has a mental retardation problem, go to the mental health people. Mental health people say, well, your kid's got organic brain damage, go to the hospital. Hospital says, well, because your kid's got a behavior problem, go to the psychologist. And the poor mother is just tearing her hair out. And managers can't resolve this issue. It seems a simple issue, but managers can't resolve it because if I accept responsibility for the case, then my pot of money is reduced. If I can fob it off to you, I get to keep more money, and it's a zero-sum game. So when they had managers trying to resolve it, they couldn't do it. So we brought it into the FICA, and we all decided that when you have these cases that are borderline, we're going to let the parent decide who's the primary person. So if mother brings the kid in to me as the psychologist, it's a mental health problem first, I got responsibility. She brings it into the hospital, it's a hospital problem. And that we wanted to do that because we want to show the community we're responsive to the community and we're not going to play games with mother when she brings in a kid for help. Managers couldn't figure this out. And they couldn't come to, but we could because we were a FICA. So a FICA is a special form of group. It's designed to change work colleagues into chums. And you do it slowly over time, and the way you do it is through food. Coffee, usually at a minimum. If you can bring in sweets, desserts, and the idea is sharing. The structure of the FICA is as follows. There is no agenda, but we're going to meet on a regular basis. This is really a good thing when you have a business that has... You may be physically in the same office, but the work you do is so different. There's no reason for you to talk to each other, and there's tendencies to stereotype the other. So, for example, in my hedge fund, the people who are in the compliance area tend to be lawyers and accountants, and the people who are the investors are completely different kinds of people. And usually they're kind of at loggerheads. It's like underwriters and salespeople. The idea of the FICA is you put them together and you just keep them together on a regular basis. Just talking about anything. And you establish these relationships, and it's through the relationships. The Swedes are so into FICA, it's mandated by law. It actually is mandated by law. And they love it. In Swedes, they go crazy about these FICAs. They actually have some manufacturing companies have candlelights. I think that's a little over the top, but that's what they do. Any questions about FICAs? Any of you have experienced something like that in any of your companies? Did you?
Yeah, I worked for a couple of solar companies out of Silicon Valley, and they try to be a little more, I guess, forward-thinking.
Yeah.
So our FICAs... have been a lot, much of the time, over beers, though. I'm not sure if that applies.
Beer. food.
We made it intentional to, during, actually, some of the companies had shared communal lunch spaces, two different companies.
Yep.
So made a point to, over lunch, make sure you sit down with somebody you don't work with, or go out to lunch. Here's your stipend. Go out to lunch with someone you don't work with. So.
Yeah, it works.
Was it intended to just have an event around people discussing informally, or was it just casual checking? Nothing.
casual chat. Yeah, there's absolutely no, here's what you need to discuss and here's what you need to cover by the end of your lunch. Just
that's, and that's part of FICA success. No agenda.
Right. So, is there a leader in the FICA?
No. No leader.
And is it across the board? This reminds me of, if you remember the old show Roseanne, which is coming back unbelievably, where they have their lunch break all together. So obviously blue-collar workers that are hourly. So it would be across the board for any type of creating a business community, I guess,
yeah,
within the organization.
That's right.
So every
Again, it depends how big your organization. In yours, it should be everybody. And in my hedge fund, it's everybody: secretaries, investors, attorneys. Doesn't matter.
Does it work better with a larger group as opposed to a smaller group?
Well, as you get to a larger group, you have to reconfigure it so that there can be cross fertilization. So, for example, in a large law, let's say you have a large law firm with lawyers in different areas, you would probably create maybe several FICAs, but structure it so that lawyers from different departments are going to be in the same FICAs. In other words, if I'm in employment, I might never see anybody in the tax area other than to refer them work. I may not even actually know that person very well. And so you'd want to put people who don't know each other well together.
What if you know each other too well? Cause you're
that's a problem.
You don't want to.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
Yeah.
It's formally set up to be an event every now and then.
On a regular basis. It doesn't have to be every week, but it could be every quarter. Just on a regular basis. So let's talk about some of the issues that you need to think about in terms of managing a FICA. First of all, who is in the FICA? Should it only be full-time employees? Many companies have contingency people. You bring in temporary people, but they're there on a regular basis. What about consultants who are there on a regular basis? Again, the work I do tends to be very transactional. I'm there for a specific purpose, and then I'm gone. I shouldn't be in a FICA. But let's say you've got an accounting practice, and every February you're going to start hiring the same person to come in during the tax season. Well, maybe that person should be in the FICA. Another issue is if you're part of a global company, and the group actually consists of people who are working out of their homes. What do you do? You can't afford to take somebody who's in India and fly them in just for coffee. So you probably have to do something online. And create do it an hour where, you might be drinking coffee and the person might be drinking some evening beverage or vice versa, but you have to. Those are decisions that you need to make.
So, is there a recommended? You mentioned an hour. Is there a recommended time span that's ideal to have? A minimum of 30 minutes, or as far as making your chums.
I would say an hour. And again, remember, there's no structure for this. It's deliberately designed to be not a structure. So again, the purpose of this is, again, let's look at insurance, underwriters versus salespeople. So that when there is stress and conflict, it's now going to be at a different level because I know you. I know the names of your children. I know what the problems you've got in school. So I'm not going to react to you like a stereotype. I've got to, because I know you too well, and that's the whole idea. So to summarize, business is conducted typically in group settings. I remember when I first started working with law firms, it's only one lawyer working on one case at one time. Everything was very solitary. Today, many of the cases are so complicated, you have to bring in other lawyers from other disciplines to sort of opine on it and help along. So everything is changing as the world gets more complicated. And there are three ways to organize a group. One is the vast majority of work is done as work groups. And the idea with work groups is, when in doubt, include the person. And again, it's expected that they come in with their functional hat, and they're thinking about what's in this in for me, and that's fine. The second is a team. A team is not a work group. A team is going to be small. There's a very specific objective. The compensation is structured so that if we get the objective, we all are going to win. But if you're not pulling your weight, I'm gonna get you kicked out of my team. And there's an esprit de corps. Let's go back to the military. The highest honor the United States can bestow on the military is the Congressional Medal of Honor. That usually is given for someone who sees an explosive device and rather than runs away, runs towards it and falls on it so that he's going to sacrifice his life so that his team members can live. That's citizenship to the highest level. But you see that in team sports all the time, and that's part of the thrill of watching a team sport is, you know, somebody who's playing basketball has the potential to get that shot, but you know what? They're going to throw the ball over here because that person is closer to the basket, and it's going to be better for the team, even though their instinct as a competitive player is, I could do that. But I'm going to throw it to somebody closer because it's better for the team. We see that all the time in team sports. It's the same idea. It's called citizenship behavior. So you're looking for citizenship behavior in teams, not necessarily citizenship behavior in work groups. And then finally, we're talking about ficas. I was running a fica before I knew what the word meant, but it was a fica. And the idea is to transform professional, we're colleagues, now we're going to be chums. Any questions?
It makes a lot of sense, because fundamentally, people like to work with people that they know, that they trust, and can build a relationship with and draw on that person's.
Well, but it even takes another thing. If I don't know you, then I just stereotype you. Mm-hmm. I'm in sales, I'm in insurance sales, and you're an underwriter. I've got also some stereotypes about underwriters, mm-hmm. So I'm going to put all those stereotypes onto you.
They're all true, by the way.
But once I know you, I know the names of your kids, I know what's going on, you know, with your husband, his health. I can't do that anymore. I got to treat you differently. So that's a FICA. Key issues in FICA management, and this is going to be a key issue for HR for the next 5 years. And that is, HR was all about how do you treat employees? Well, the problem is the customer sees employees not the same way you see employees. Customer sees anybody who's working in your organization as an employee. And for them, it's all the same. You, as the HR person, may see a big difference between a W-2 employee who is regular and gets full benefits and a 1099 employee who's just there on a contract basis. But your customers don't care. Your customers don't care. So you know, when you have your parties, when you have your profit sharing, what are you going to do with the 1099s? That's going to be the challenge for the next, certainly over the next 3 years. Any questions? Again, please feel free to give me your business card. I'll be glad to send you the MP3 of this talk, plus the PowerPoints, plus the Harvard Business Review article on Teams. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you.